So I'm not sure everybody knows everybody. Just two introductions around.
I'm Marie.
Edith.
John.
Roman.
Karin.
Nice to see you. I spent a lot of time this week trying to come up with a subject for the talk today. And usually I have some kind of issue in my mind from my reading or my experiences in making from one point to a next one. There's always something coming up. And nothing came up. And I've also been thinking a lot about precepts because we're going to begin a start of the precepts study again. And there's some people who are getting close to taking the precepts again, and some for the first time. And that's always a very wonderful time. It's sort of like Christmas and Buddha's birthday all mixed up together in the same time. And so the more it kept coming up in my mind, the more Zazen practice itself came up as the essence of whatever else it is that we do. And we just did a service with a lot of words and chanting and all of them deeply meaningful, deeply helpful to our practice. They all come back to the sit itself and to each one of us ourselves, even though we practice together in this way and all the different ways that we have. Each thing that happens is our own. It's from our own aspect and from our own direction. It's real simple, really. We talk about how we could all sit down and draw that thing, and it would be a different picture for each person. And not just because of the angle, but because of how we are seeing, what kind of inner view we have of things. For some people it would shine, and for other people it would look maybe sort of crass and cheap, or you could imagine all the different kinds of ways that it would look to different people depending on their state of mind. If things weren't working out so well, it wouldn't be so beautiful. If things were working out really well, sometimes everything is beautiful. It's so interesting that way. And that's one of the things that we become very exposed to in our meditation. People ask me, you know, about their sit. Am I sitting well? Is it a good sit? I had a very bad sit this morning. But there's nothing to compare it to, because you and I don't know what each other's sit is like. We don't know what a good sit is. We think a good sit is the one that makes us feel good about ourselves, perhaps, or more insightful or more better in some way, but that isn't necessarily any way to measure. There really is no way to measure. So it's kind of cruel in a way that we can't tell to ourselves or anybody else how well we're doing. But it's a really good thing, because comparing ourselves is such a foolish exercise anyway. We can't compare. There is no comparison. On one level, we're all the same, exactly the same. And on another level, we're inconceivably different from each other in ways that could never even be measured, because all the causes and conditions that go together to make your protoplasm and my protoplasm and yours are totally different. Now, the DNA, not to speak of the dust from the stars that we're breathing and the DNA that came from great, 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 great grandfather. It all goes back and back. And our sitting itself goes back. Our sitting itself is old. So the momentary, moment by moment sit that we do, and the ancient sitting that we are very different ways of thinking about or experiencing what it is to sit. The everyday moment is the one that we measure and try to figure out whether we're doing a good job, or wonder whether it's really the right way, or what did Dogen really mean. And on the other hand, it's ancient and inconceivable. It goes farther back than the Big Bang and has been with us always. So it makes it, we're talking about Zazen.
You asked for it with a smile that said it.
Oh. Okay, brother. So, Roman, do you know these guys? You've seen them around. Okay. So, Zazen has been very much on my mind because we're about to study the precepts, and I thought the only way to talk about the precepts is where it comes from, and that it's not coming from on high. It isn't being laid on us by some authority, that it's arising from our own life and practice and our own life understanding. And that as we sit, if we're caught up with constantly comparing our sits with ourself, berating ourself because we're not doing it right or not living up to some high standard, or being disappointed, or being terribly proud because my Zazen is so good compared to, look at them. No. And it's just so common and so human and so funny. It's not really so serious, except it is serious. Because if we don't cotton to where our authority is, if we take authority ourselves in hand and think we're the driving force of it, that it's a mistake. And as we sit, we have to recognize and surrender to what we don't know, and allow that to be the leading force of our life. It looks like the precepts are telling us you've got to do this and you've got to do that. It's not like that. It's that as we navigate our life step by step and moment by moment, we encounter our life as we're encountered by. And this mutuality of it always brings up some decision to make of how to do, how to enact our life. So Zazen is really about action, about how what we choose each time we have an opportunity to choose. Am I going to step aside and let somebody else go through the door first? It's so simple. Am I going to serve this person, or am I going to take the food and eat it all myself? There are all these tiny little decisions that we make all day long. And if we're not aware of it, we're blindly sort of staggering through our life and leaving behind a sort of messy wake, you could say, of little mistakes, little, and mistake meaning mistaking, taking in a way that isn't correct, isn't accurate, isn't wise. And Zazen itself is the source of our insight, our way to see. It's about seeing as action and as enacting our life so that we can we don't correct ourselves. It isn't like we see that we're killing a carrot when we eat lunch and so we'll never do it again. Of course we will. And we will tell lies and we will do all sorts of terrible things that that precepts are all about. We will praise or blame. We will dwell on past mistakes. We just do these things. But with the precepts, we're able to recognize, to re-see them, to re-understand them. And that creates a whole different atmosphere around our life. And that atmosphere itself creates a sense of safety for ourselves because we're awake to what's happening, to what we're doing. There's a clarity that gives us a sense of connection so that other people feel safe around us. So that we're not in a land of frightened people, including ourselves. This is a time of lots of frightened people. And the more that we can do to assuage that fear, the better the world is going to be. I've talked to so many idealistic people who just want to fix everything and change everything and make it all better. And I think beginning with Zazen and the precepts is the way to go. It's very plain and simple and undramatic. It doesn't get you any points in heaven. It doesn't even win us any friends. You know, nobody's going to give us a prize because we're doing this. And yet, I do think it's the essence of human life that we're discovering. I think we're so new as animals on the earth, and that we're still learning how to be the kind of animal that we are, and trying to understand it. It's still a very big mystery. And when Dogen talks about studying the self, it's not about studying me, my background, my ancestors, all of those things are really important to be aware of. But just what it is to be this animal breathing right here in this room. What it is to be this creature, this bag of bones and blood, they say. And how to allow it to be accepted as it is, and allow it to be the best way it wants to be. Because the precepts come out of a deep desire to do what works. It's not some fancy idea. They really came from people living together and trying to live with harmony. And each time somebody made a mistake, a mistake, they would go to Buddha and say, you know, Charlie just killed a snake. I don't think that was a real good idea. And Buddha said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. Let's decide not to kill things unless we absolutely have to. It was like that. Joe stole my razor. Well, let's decide. Let's not take anything unless you get permission. And then they would say, oh, okay, let's do that. And then they decided they'd get together 4 times a month at every moon, phase of moon. And they'd gather in a little circle like this, and the guy would say, Joe, you took my razor. And Joe would say, yeah, I'm really sorry. And so instead of this, there was room for the mind of everyone to flourish in clarity and simplicity and humility. It's a very humbling practice, this. It's very, very humbling. There is no rising up to anything. Kogan always said it's just one stepping down after another. And boy, is that true. So I wanted to hear about your experiences in Zazen also, and about this subject, because I think it's so important right now, and I hope we're all thinking about it in some way or another, that we could talk about it a little bit. And there's some old time sitters and some new time sitters, and it's a wonderful mix. It's perfect. So please share.
I think in sitting, you know, my wife passed away about a year and a half ago, and the first year and a half has been really hairy for me, and has really driven me deep into my Zazen to survive. And the hardest thing of all seems to be, I think about the 5 skandhas as being, you know, it goes from one to the next. It goes from form to feelings, perceptions, impulses, and consciousness. And if a thought comes up, then it's just a thought. But as soon as it turns into the next skanda of feelings, you're dead meat.
Yes.
You know, and so to try and, you know, I keep it at the first skanda of form, or before that, where no thoughts arise at all. And I mean, day after day after day this year, I've just been sobbing in my zazen up at Jikoji. And, you know, thank God for all the wonderful people who live there. You know, just come and hold me in their arms when I'm absolutely a wreck. And sometimes, you know,
I think maybe we don't talk about death enough and what happens when somebody that we're close to, I was married for 45 years or so, married by COVID, and I did not know that it was going to mean Tina and I talked about dying, and you know, we went on 5 years retreat in a hut in the desert, you know, miles and miles from any other places, and we got really close at the end, and we talked and we read this, you know, so many of the sutras talk about death. Buddha talks about death all the time, says you should talk about it all the time and become familiar with it. And when Tina died, it blew me away. I mean, I was just, I did not know. And if it had not been for just sitting, you know, I took a vow with Coven a long time ago that I would sit at least 1 minute for the rest of my life every day. So it only takes 1 minute. Sometimes you're too busy to do anything other than that. And during this most difficult time of my life, just working with my zazen, you know, sometimes there's just nowhere else to go.
Why it's called a refuge.
It works.
It works.
Good to know that.
Yeah.
We've been sitting near each other for a long time, haven't
you? Oh, we certainly have, Eric. We certainly have.
It's just wonderful to see you.
Vice versa.
Feel very close.
Yeah.
How's your thousand?
Depends on the minute you're asking.
So you have the goddess here with you. Prajna Paramita.
Yeah.
Coven used to say to me before I went to Tassajara, he said, you should hear the voices of the daimyo shows in the creek.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful, the Tayo shows.
Moment by moment.
Moment by moment by moment. Yeah. That's all there is.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you.
A question for you. Or you, or anyone. How long did it take for you to really develop that sensitivity of recognizing, I guess you called it form to feeling, just the difference, like, oh, this is a thought, and I can, I guess just like, it seems like a nice stage to get to, but I almost feel out of control of that, you know, this arising of the emotion.
This is why it is so important to make a strong, friendly connection with your teacher, because otherwise you're not going to find it. You know, it was actually after my wife died, and, you know, I'd been on retreat, Coven said, sit two sticks of incense per day, you know, 2 hours of zazen per day when you're on retreat. You know, and I did that, and it wasn't until, you know, after I lost my wife and I moved up to Jikoji, and then a Zen teacher there, Jana, needed a lot of help, and she likes to talk to me and she likes my company, and so I would often take her on drives, and, you know, out to the sea coast or over Mount Hamilton and places like that, and we got to just be together a lot, and it was she who began to point things out. You know, it's something that I didn't. When we had Haiku Zendo and Coven was there, and we'd see him every morning when we'd go to sit, you know, and we'd bring our whatever it was that was on our mind, it just come up, you know, and we'd get to hear what he said about it, you know. So it's very important to spend time with your teacher and to allow things like, you know, this teaching of the five skandhas. Actually, I wanted to ask you, there one of the skandhas, I don't know what the Japanese of it is, has that same base as jhananas. Or let me ask it another way.
I don't know it in any other language. So form, feeling, perception, and impulses is a very questionable one. Is that the one you're talking about?
Impulses means our inner topography.
Yeah.
Think of it when I'm walking in the mountains like that, whatever would come up like that. But one of the five is most important for Zenists, I think. And I can't remember, but I can't remember what the Sanskrit for those, for the five is. And but it was in Jhanas, the Jhananas. Which one of the five would you say is the most important, or the gap between them for sitters?
For sitters, I think not considering them at all is the most important part. I mean, it's fine to discuss them afterwards, but during sitting, I think simply allowing the actuality of what's going on, you could say the form of the body and the breath and the presence, the being present. So it's really all of them. It's really just describing one thing. Form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness, it's all of a package. So you really, we take it out with words and separate them, but I don't think you can separate them.
Has the longer that you've been sitting, do you feel like you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into the primordial swamp?
No.
You don't?
I don't.
Going right into the pain, right into the suffering, not trying to escape from it, but to go right into it.
Oh, yeah.
In that sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If somebody is hurting, I hurt. But it works the other way around, too. If somebody's happy, I'm really, really happy. So, yeah. That's what it is. It's not even about deepening our practice. It's how we can relate. How we can be with everything as it is. So I wouldn't choose a state. I think they're all different states of being that are all just different ways of describing this animal we are. This strange, slightly magical animal that we don't really understand very well. But I'll look up those Sanskrit words because now you've got me curious.
Well, can I bring up a question from about, it seemed like Suzuki Roshi gave a talk there and he said Zazen is not one of the four postures.
Standing, walking, sitting, and lying down?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember that. No, it's not.
But then again, it seems also like Cohen taught that Zazen is all of the four postures.
Well, that's the same thing.
So it's not well or nothing, yes. Is well and nothing.
Well, that's the thing. It's, you know, Nagarjuna was real good at talking about this stuff. And as soon as you put one thing out, you have to bring the other thing out, or it doesn't make sense. They define each other. So that's the way our mind works, wanting to hold on to one side and say, oh, that's true. I know this is true. But you cannot really posit this as true without this. And then you have to see, oh, but you can't say either one, really. You know, if you posit peace, peace, peace. Oh, I'm all for peace. But peace means no war. Oh, war came alive over here suddenly. Now you have peace and war. Now what? Well, but now what do I do? And then we have to see there isn't any such thing as either one all by themselves, and that there is a way that our mind doesn't like to go. The mind likes to have one side or the other, and you can't say both without working at it, making some kind of effort to understand or let go of the grasping of the sides. Let them go and let them be what they are, which is both of them are true. You can't have one without the other. John?
When you said this struck a chord in me, you know, it seems like the essence of the ancient Chinese philosophy is this yin yang, this mm-hmm. balancing act. And what you just spoke is sort of a balancing. And I see that in our practice. Everything's balanced. We have samsara, nirvana, day, light, up, down. We deal with that. And what you're talking about is war and peace being the same. Fits in very well with that. Can you say more about the balancing aspect of our Zen practice?
Well, balancing sounds kind of precarious, and I don't think it's precarious. I think it's just being willing to see clearly that there are aspects of war in peace, in a peaceful situation, whatever situation we're in, when we tend to want to call it one thing, to be willing and brave enough to bring up the other side and see that both are true, and then be able to handle the situation more clearly and more honestly than saying, oh, it's got to be this way because this is the good way and this is the bad way. But actually, they have different aspects of each other, and they are each other. So it creates a whole lot more harmony and stability, so you don't have to feel like you're teetering on a wire somewhere. You're right there with everything and sorting it out and calling it as you see it, and then being willing to let go if it doesn't seem to fit anymore. It's just the holding on that's always screwing everything up. Just let it go, and then gently take something and see if that works, and see if that'll mix in there, and then if it doesn't work, let it go. It makes life so much more interesting. It's so much more fascinating, you know, if you can allow more of it to actually exist in your life as it does, and then find ways of being with it without being overwhelmed. Does that make sense? It is difficult. It's very simple and very difficult. Roman?
I'll just talk about the skandhas and all the dualistic ideas of all war and peace and all this. The word popped in my head was the hindrances. And I think there's some hindrances here.
There are lots of hindrances.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's made up of hindrances. But they're all our friends. It's what we get to work with. That's what the precepts are about, is recognizing what comes up and dealing with it. Yeah. We're a mess, you know, in the sense of the hindrances. If you look into your mind and body and how you're operating. At least in my experience, I'm a mess. No, it's not a pretty picture. If you wanted some kind of lovely, perfect, beautiful person, you wouldn't get it. But that isn't the point.
Yeah, I think if my picture is probably like a Rorschach or some, you know, just
yes,
that artist that would splash the paint everywhere.
Oh, Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, I'm a Jackson Pollock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hard to recognize sometimes.
Well, but they're beautiful splashes, right? Yeah, I love those paintings. There's one at Stanford. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll take my girl out there.
Yeah, it's great.
Great museum.
Edith?
When you ask what our experience of Zazen is, I can say as an old and imperfect sitter that what keeps coming up for me is things like when we go straight, don't know,
mm-hmm.
just this, breathe in, breathe out, you know, recognizing no difference between sitting and living. And when hindrances come up, I remind myself that the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah.
Say it again. The great.
And was it Sinsheng Min?
Yeah, it's the third ancestor.
Third ancestor. There's a long prose poem or sutra that, and it starts out in the first few lines, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. And most of our struggles seem to be fighting, you know, I wanted this, I didn't get this, this
yeah.
isn't fair. You know, all those things which come back to preferences.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it fixes it every time. Once you recognize it, yeah. And only don't know is a really good way of starting practice each time. I often do that when I'm just starting to sit. I'll just remind myself that I really don't know. I don't know why I'm sitting down, and I don't know where this is going to go, and it's okay. You know? It's all right not to know.
I just want to, it seems like what your greatest teacher, greatest Zen teacher is your grief right now. And it that just reminds me that all along the way, or the reason I was brought to practice was about loss, and my relationship was loss. So I met a teacher, and we were in a kind of an AIDS buddy group, and it wasn't intended to be Zen or anything, but it ended up being quite Zen, the practice, and so I agree that, you know, in our practice we should be considering this relationship with the greatest loss, our own death, and partner or whatever. Yeah.
Did you come into, excuse me, is that, can I ask your question?
Yeah, please. Of course.
Did you come into sitting through that?
I guess indirectly, kind of, yeah, I guess I could just say that I met a teacher who wasn't a Zen teacher then, and became a Zen teacher, but sort of by taking us through the exercise of understanding our relationship with death and grief and or people who were in our group who were very ill, or, you know, this unknown, and the whole exercise was just the most powerful thing I had done at that period of my life. You know, I was in my 20s, and it ended up being my just orienting, I guess, as I met other teachers along the way, you know, but I realized the only reason I was met that teacher and met that community was from my own early losses. I had already broken open something that made me be able to be there with other people, and even, I don't know, it just seems to continue to be my biggest teacher of sorts. Mm. Is the biggest losses or something. I can't explain it again. Mm. You were a perfectly present, compassionate person. You maybe wouldn't need the practice.
Oh, it doesn't. Nothing stays. Nothing stays.
Because that doesn't exist.
There's no such thing. We practice till our very last breath. I hope. We may not get the opportunity, depending on how it works, but we certainly hang in there until as much as we can. Yeah, there are too many changes happening all the time that you cannot pin anything down. Hardly anything ever about Zazen can you pin down. And that's another thing that's so interesting, that we're all reflecting the changes that are happening all the time, that our mind is reflecting it. And so it's alive. It's very alive, and it keeps on being alive. Even, and you know, as your body starts falling apart, sometimes your mind falls apart too. But if it doesn't, you can still be aware, even though, you know, nothing works very well anymore. It's just, it's so interesting. Well, it's time. So thank you all very much.